former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Lots of football news and notes to break down over the next 2 hours. Win totals, awards markets, and contract negotiations, oh my. Plus, could we end up with a pair of sweeps in the NBA Conference Finals? You heard that laugh alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. Welcome into the show, this Memorial Day Monday edition of the program, Michael. I know for as excited as we are to talk about sports, you're also, like me, trying to remember the importance of today and what this day really is about.
Yeah, I think we sometimes confuse Veteran Day with Memorial Day, which started out as Decoration Day back in 1868 when they honored the Union and Confederate soldiers at Arlington Cemetery. And I think that's an, you know, obviously all the things that we share and enjoy in our life, no matter how much we want to argue amongst one another, freedom is something that we've gained from these people making the ultimate sacrifice. And today is more than just barbecues, Little League baseball, and hot dogs and hamburgers and all those things. It's about really being thankful for where we are and the freedom we enjoy from those who gave up their sacrifices in life.
No question about it. Enjoy the barbecues, sweat out your bets, but take a moment to remember why we have the ability to be able to do those things. It's because of the people
to
that
sweat
did.
It out.
Exactly.
Right. To sweat out those bets.
Literally and figuratively. There we go. Also on the show today, in about 30 minutes, we'll have Thomas Gable join us, as he always does on a Monday, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. And also coming up in hour two, Herm Edwards, former NFL head coach and player turned ESPN analyst. We'll get him on the Progressive guest line as well to talk through some of the big headlines in the National Football League. But let's go to the NBA first, Michael, because how about those Dallas Mavericks, who take a commanding 3-0 lead? You have been on Dallas all the way through. What impressed you most about the way they handled business to go up 3-0 yesterday?
You know, I think sometimes, and look, I think Kyrie, we confuse off the court with on the court. Kyrie has always been an elite player. Now, there's been some things that have been a little bit uncomfortable around what he said and how he's behaved. I get that. But since he's been in Dallas with Jason Kidd, he has been a completely different player. And the player is elite. The player's elite. And Luka's elite. And this trade that they made at the trading deadline to get P.J. Washington to come in, to get Gafford to come in, has been changed their team. They went from being in the middle of the pack defensively to being a better team defensively. Luka's playing better defense. I think we just overlooked them because they were in the West. Minnesota was getting so much attention. You know, Oklahoma City was getting all the attention, those teams, and Denver being the champion of last year. But this was always a good team because they have depth, they're well coached, and they have two elite players that in the fourth quarter can win games. And we saw it. Kyrie went into the fourth quarter with 19 points. He ends up with 33. You know, Luka makes critical plays down the stretch for them, and they're able to outscore their opponent 29-20 in the fourth quarter to win the game. So I've always felt like they've been undervalued in the marketplace. And I think now today we're starting to catch up to it a little bit. Like they got a chance to sweep Minnesota. You know, they beat Oklahoma City. I mean, the Clippers, which have this huge payroll and all the superstars, they took care of business there. I mean, last night they lose Lively, and they still were able. Gafford came through and played. Yeah. So I'm really happy for Dallas. I'm happy for Jason Kidd, but I'm enjoying watching the team play.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned Gafford there, because the two unbelievable all-ball blocks that he has when you need them, and then the alley-oop slam at the end of the game, like, he was somebody who stepped up. But to your point, I think the big difference in this game has been the superstars for the Mavericks doing their part, whereas for the Minnesota Timberwolves, we haven't seen that as much. Anthony Edwards' shooting percentage down. Karl Anthony Towns struggling massively. But then you have Luka and Kyrie, who the step-back threes from Luka every time, beautiful. That shot over Rudy Gobert. Kyrie, the handles that he shows off in the fourth quarter dominance that he has, as you referenced, 14 of his 33 coming there in the fourth. They both end up with 33. Like, they have been the difference as they win game three, 116-107. They cover all of the numbers. Total goes over. And with this now, we all know the stat at this point. No team in NBA history has overcome a 3-0 series deficit, 154. And Kyrie Irving was asked about how he feels given that stat.
Going into game four, it's still 0-0. And that's the type of motivation and mentality we have in that locker room. It's not just me. We feel like the job isn't finished, and we're going against one of the greatest teams in the world. You know, they still have the capability of beating us on any given night, and we have to treat them like that. So, you know, it's a time to celebrate after the game, but once I get up here, it's on to the next thing and thinking about my recovery work, putting my kids to bed, watching film, and just getting ready for this war, man, warlike battle that's going to come.
And that's what you want to hear from your leader at this point in the series. That and to your point about what a masterful like rebrand of perception we have of Kyrie Irving at this point.
Yeah, no, I mean, guy couldn't get a shoe contract. Remember? I mean, you know, he got lost his shoe deal. He lost everything because of things that had occurred in his life, and he's just completely transformed himself into this player. And Jason Kidd told everybody in Dallas, if we get Irving, well, he'll play well for us. And he's proven to be true. And I think that's the right mentality to have, because one thing we do know about Minnesota is they have really good players too. And they won three road games in Denver. You can't take that away from them. They beat the world champions. And so they're a formidable opponent. And all these three games, I mean, going into last night, the margin of victory in the combined games was 4 points. And then last night was really, it looks like a blowout, but it really wasn't. You know, it wasn't. Dallas built a big lead, had the stupid foul at the end of the half to get it to close it to 7. And then, you know, Minnesota makes their run. And then it was those final 4 minutes. You know, that's the funny thing about sports. So many sports are similar. It's who can close games. Who wins the last 4 minutes of the first half in the NFL? Who wins the last 4 minutes of the game in the NFL? Who closes out in baseball? What closer is effective? In basketball, who can put the ball in the basket when everybody knows they're going to get it? Luka and Kyrie are 22 for 40 combined in shooting. And we said this going into the series. Minnesota has nobody on the team that can cover Kyrie and Luka. They can't stay in front of them. And I think Barkley made a great point that great scorers, it's almost impossible. Mike, you might make Michael work hard. Like Dort made Luka work his butt off, right? But he still got his points. And he was physical with him, and he was beating him up, but he still got his points. And that's the challenge, right? You've got to limit the lobs. You got to limit the other players from beating you. And unfortunately, Minnesota hasn't.
And I mean, going up 3-0 in a series makes it feel on the surface like this has been very one-sided, but these have been three individual, very close games.
Yeah.
The three games have been decided by a total cumulative 13 points here, but the difference has been, as we've talked about, the superstars rising up, and you mentioned those clutch minutes late in the game. Mavs in the regular season were the number one team in the league in clutch time. They are so relaxed and poised in those moments, and then you look at the Timberwolves, conversely, for as great as their defense has been throughout the course of the season, clutch time, they were 22nd in the league, and that really showed up, I feel like, late in games in this series. In terms of the prices, Dallas was a plus 145 dog entering this set. By the time they go up 2-0, they're minus 525. After the game yesterday, minus 1,800 securing game three at home. And if you like that 10-1 on the Timberwolves, as I referenced, you're literally betting on history. It's something that has never been done before. In terms of the look-aheads now as well, Michael, with the Boston Celtics up 3-0 and a potential closeout sweep coming up later on tonight against the Pacers, which we'll discuss. They went from plus 210, already taking money down to plus 190. So people are banking on it being the Mavericks that are in that spot and potentially upsetting the Boston Celtics. How do you feel they could match up with that team in Boston?
I think Dallas can match up with anybody. And I think Dallas having two stars can handle that. And look, one thing we know about the Boston series against Indiana, you could say whatever you want. The reality of it is Indiana could be up 2-1. I mean, Indiana couldn't close the game out. And I think more of it was coaching than it was actual, we didn't have a closer. I mean, they got the first game. They should have won the first game. That was inexcusable what happened in there, but it did. And then the other night, you know, they get, you know, Holiday strips the ball from the Pacers. And the next thing you know, that game's over. They overcame a huge lead. I think, to me, Boston shows vulnerability. We said this on the show yesterday, Stormy. I think Dallas was plus 260 against Boston if you wanted it. And we said yesterday, if they win tonight, that number's going to go down. Now it's plus 190. So it's still a really good number, but you could have had a better number. I don't think you can underestimate Dallas. If you do, you're going to make the same mistake that everybody else has been making in the NBA playoffs, is they're underestimating Dallas. Like, when does Dallas finally realize that this is an elite team?
Yeah.
And they play really well. The chemistry and the camaraderie that you can feel from their team is powerful. I mean, I'm sitting, you know, 1,800 miles away watching it on TV, and I can feel their culture is resonates with me through the screen. You could see it. They're unselfish, you know, whereas I think sometimes the Pacers, I think sometimes somebody wants to be the hero for the Pacers when they're not ready to be the hero.
Yeah, and Michael, with that, because you talk about the games, I mean, the Pacers could be up 2-1, to your point. Game three up as many as 18. They're up 8 with 2:30 to go. Give up that golden opportunity in game one. I was looking up the ESPN win probability numbers there. They had a 98% chance to win game one with 10 seconds left, 95% chance to win game three with 2 minutes to go. And it's just remarkable how things change, and they find themselves down 3-0. Tonight, the Celtics are laying 7.5 right now in Indiana, total 222.5. No Kristaps Porzingis, who's still out with the calf strain. Tyrese Halliburton, questionable, dealing with a hamstring of his own. But Celtics have an opportunity to punch their ticket to the NBA Finals if they can get it done tonight. And actually, as I say that 7.5, Pacers taking a little bit of that plus money, of that plus number there down to 7. So keep that in mind. Okay, we're going to have to hit the break here in a moment. We're just getting started on the Lombardi Line. When we come back to the NFL, we will go, Michael, should we really trust Nathaniel Hackett just because Aaron Rodgers says so? And did this star wide receiver almost get traded on draft night? We'll talk both of those topics and a number of things around the NFL when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the amazing betting tools and content at VSiN.com. We've got best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, and trends. And right now on the homepage, VSiN Steve Mackinnon with NBA top plays and breakdowns of the power ratings and trends to know ahead of the two game fours in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. We've also got daily best bets in the NHL postseason, Major League Baseball, and the WNBA. Plus, if you like the Lombardi Line, you'll love Michael's weekly columns. Don't miss out. Head to vsin.com today.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. This is noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
All right. Is it news or is it noise? And I feel like it's just a weekly tradition at this point that we start with a topic relating to the New York Jets. The Jets reportedly looked at hiring someone else to run the offense over Nathaniel Hackett this past offseason. Hackett himself said he was aware of the team's conversations with others, but he feels he's got the full confidence of head coach Robert Saleh. With that in mind, Aaron Rodgers with Adam Schein over the weekend was asked why the Jets and Jets fans should trust Hackett. Here's what he had to say.
Why should I trust Nathaniel Hackett as the offensive coordinator?
Well, you should trust me, and I trust Nathaniel. To me, that's the end of the story. There's been a lot of BS that's been said out there. There's a lot of things that have gone on the last couple of years that he's dealt with that I think he's handled very professionally. And at the end of the day, I think you got to trust him and I's working relationship and the conversation that we have.
If you trust Rodgers, you should trust Hackett. Michael, news or noise?
Well, I think it's news that he went out and really basically said, no more. Like, look at me. Like, you give him credit as a leader. What do leaders typically need to do? They stand in front of those they're leading, which is kind of a unique situation here, right? Because the coach should be leading the player, but in this instance, the player's leading the coach, which is essentially what's going on. And Rodgers is going to make this offense look better. There's no question. It can't look any worse. It was bad in Denver. It's been bad here. It was bad 2 years in Denver. So the question's a fair one. But when you put Rodgers and his defense of it into it, it's going to be better. The question mark that's going to come is, what happens when the game starts. Who's making the adjustments? Who's fixing everything? And how is everyone getting coordinated? Yeah. The fact that the Jets thought they needed to have someone else, now, could that have come from Woody? I think what's happening here is everybody in the building saying, well, Woody wanted us to look into this. So they can have absolution. They can have plausible deniability. But if you're the head coach of the Jets, you have to wonder whether you have enough systematic approach offensively to handle the rigors of the good defensive coaches in the National Football League. I think that's a fair question, and they didn't answer that.
And Michael, I did appreciate Rodgers last week, his self-awareness that, hey, if things don't go right and they don't go to plan this year, we could all be out the door after this, which leads me to a follow-up of, like, what is the limit for the Jets, for this coaching staff to still have their jobs next year? Like, do they need to win a division title and win at least one playoff game? Or what do you think is the realm for which they need to stay?
I think that's a great question, Stormy, because if you got a 41-year-old quarterback and you win and you get to the wild card and you lose a wild card game, are you really sure you can get back there again in next year with a 42-year-old quarterback? Like, I'm not saying they have to win the Super Bowl, they're all going to lose their job, but there's no long-range plan here, right? What, Jordan Travis is going to be the heir apparent to Rodgers? I don't know that. It's certainly not Tyrod Taylor. So it's a fair question you ask, because what is the long term? I think this is everybody's in survival mode here at the Jets. The general manager wants to survive. The head coach wants to survive. And Rodgers wants to help them all survive, because they've given him everything he's wanted. I don't know what's the measurement of success. To me, it has to be a Super Bowl, because to say it, lose a wild card game and come back at 42 years old, we're calling them the ifers now. What are they going to look like next year? The ifers squared?
Fair point. To be the AFC's representative in the Super Bowl, the odds sitting at 11-1. Win total for the Jets, 9.5. It is juiced to the over at -150. Rodgers, 16-1 in the MVP market. Even money for comeback player of the year. The second shortest shot on the odds board for comeback player of the year is Joe Burrow, Michael, who's coming back from a torn ligament in his right wrist. And there have been a lot of questions about the recovery from this injury. He reportedly has faced no limitations so far, and his offensive coordinator, Dan Pitcher, said, quote, "We designed the whole thing to stay within the constraints of where the medical people think he should be and where he wants to be right now. But nobody's sitting here with a pitch counter. We have been smart about how we put things together." Also said he was really happy Burrow has all his range and power. News or noise?
I think it's noise. I mean, if he was out there, what's he out there for if he's not out there ready to go? I mean, we all fully expect Joe Burrow to be 100%. Now, the question is, you know, he's had these injuries before. You know, some guys have gotten hit with their hand on helmets and it's a problem. And Burrow happens to be one of those guys. He has some hand injuries that have happened in the past, and they're going to have to do a good job about that. But I fully expect him to be 100%. I think the bigger question in Cincinnati isn't Burrow's health. Is the offensive line, Trent Brown, not part of OTAs? He's got a million excuses why he can't show up. And is Mims going to be good enough? I think that's the bigger question on this team.
Eight teams in the NFL with win totals 10.5 or higher. Cincinnati's one of them. Good news, they have a last place schedule. Bad news, they play in the AFC North. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler has reported 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk is looking for Amon-Ra St. Brown money. St. Brown's extension gives him $28 million a year through 3 years, and it looks like Ayuk is gunning for something in that neighborhood, Michael. News or noise?
Well, I think it's news, but why wouldn't he want the same deal? I mean, this is what happens is water seeks its level. One guy gets a deal done, the next guy. And Ayuk's a huge part of what the 49ers do, because when you break down the 49er passing game, everything happens inside. They don't have an outside. Ayuk gave them 17 yards per catch this year outside the numbers. They don't have that. As good as Debo is in terms of run after the catch and basically being a running back playing wide receiver, you know, they need a guy who could run routes and win on third down, and Ayuk has developed into that role. So I have a feeling, to me, I think what's tying all this up, I think they want to pay Ayuk. I think they don't want to pay Ayuk and Samuel and Debo. I think they're trying to make some decisions on this if they can. But I think right now it's been a little iffy to do that.
We'll see how the 49ers are able to maneuver things. Where things sit right now, Ayuk set to make $14.1 million in base salary this year. Another piece of interesting wide receiver news that came out this week. In a Sunday column of Charlie Walters from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, he writes, "There was buzz at draft time that the Vikings wanted to move from number 11 to number 5, but it wasn't for a quarterback, instead to get LSU wide receiver Malik Nabers, who was ultimately picked at 6 by the Giants. Had that trade occurred, Justin Jefferson would have been traded, and Nabers would have been the number one receiver." Big if true, Michael. The Vikings, of course, trying to figure out what to do with Justin Jefferson in a contract we expect to reset the wide receiver market. News or noise here?
I think this is real news, and I think it's true. And I think if you're doing your job as a general manager of the team, what you don't want to do is pay. You want guys on rookie contracts. And so what they were willing to do is exactly what they did with Stephon Diggs. They've done it once before. They traded Diggs. They picked Jefferson. They get rid of Diggs' huge contract. They bring Jefferson in at a cheap number for 5 years. Now, do they pay Jefferson $35, $36 million above and beyond, make him the highest paid receiver? Or do they go get Nabers for 5 years and essentially get the same player? Now, it's potential, but the same characteristics that Jefferson had. I think it's the right thing to do. Now, you say, well, what would have happened with the quarterback? Well, they would have gotten a boatload of draft picks for Jefferson. Somebody would have given them two number ones for that. There's no question. And had they done that, they would have been in good shape. I think this is just good general managing. And don't take it personally. That's just what it is. And not enough teams think like this. They fall in love. Look, I love Jefferson. I love him. I think he's great, right? But when he eats up all the cap and we don't have enough to build a team, how do we run that? How does that happen for us? That's the challenge. So we'll see. I mean, if somebody's willing to pay him $33, $34 and give you a bunch of draft picks, you got to seriously consider that. You really do, assuming you can hit on the draft picks.
Very interesting. Jefferson 15-1 in the offensive player of the year odds. Vikings, not very high expectations. Win total sitting 6.5. Last offseason, the 49ers traded away Trey Lance to the Dallas Cowboys. He ended up being their QB3 last year. He's gunning for QB2 behind Dak Prescott and says he's at his best mentally, physically, and spiritually, knowing who he is, where he is, and able to be present. News or noise, Trey Lance entering right. Quarterback 2 battle with Cooper Rush.
Well, he has to be on it, right? And I think there's no more pressure on. I mean, when you get all the draft picks traded for you and you come in as the guy who's supposed to carry the franchise and be the face of the franchise, you have all this pressure. And frankly, not a lot of guys are ready to handle it. I think now what Lance is really saying is, I have no pressure on me. I can just go play, which might be good. But until we watch him play, when the game is speeded up, not preseason, when the game's speeded up, we still won't know.
Yeah, haven't seen anything in an NFL game yet to prove that he can be the guy, but we'll see. Okay, we've got to take a quick time out on the other side of the break. Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, will join us. How's tonight's Game 4 in the Eastern Conference Final getting bet?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time only, we're slashing the price of our annual subscription, usually $240. You can now secure a VSiN Pro subscription for just $199. Plus, if you sign up today, we'll throw in an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. But you need to use our promo code Lombardi. And hurry, this special offer is only available for a few more days up until May 31st. With VSiN Pro, you get immediate access to our daily best bets, complete with a leaderboard showcasing the hottest VSiN experts, betting splits that reveal where the money and bets are trending for every game, exclusive betting splits, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Remember, though, this offer expires May 31st. So head over to vsin.com/subscribe now and grab your 14 months of VSiN Pro for $199 with the promo code Lombardi. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Excited now to hit the progressive guest line with the one and only Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. I want to start with tonight as we see both the Mavs and Celtics up 3-0 in their respective series. Boston with a chance to close things out this evening, which I think we largely expect they will. But the Pacers could also be up 2-1 in this series had things fallen just slightly different at the end of games. How are people betting this one tonight?
It's early money here on the Pacers, and you've seen this fall from 8 Celtics opened as 8-point favorites, now down to 7, pretty much across the market. So, you know, as you pointed out, very easily the Pacers could be and probably should be up 2-1 in this series. And I think you really have to look at Rick Carlisle at this point and question some of the decision-making. Obviously, in game one there was a lot of self-inflicted wounds between the turnovers at the end of the game, the decision by Carlisle not to foul up 3, and then Brown, of course, hits the three-pointer at the end of regulation to force overtime there, and we know what happened in overtime. And then in game 3, the Pacers obviously had a big lead throughout and coughed that up. And even in game 2, I question Carlisle, where, yes, they lost Halliburton during that game, but he essentially waved the white flag in game 2 around the 9-minute mark, and they were down, I guess, around 13, I think, around that point. But 13 points is nothing in the NBA. Teams go on big runs all the time, especially Indiana, with the pace that they play at. They can score in bunches. So it just – I've been left scratching my head a lot during this series with Indiana, and no Halliburton obviously is going to hurt them. But you expect the Celtics to close this out and go on. And, you know, both series being 3-0 now, if both – end up being sweeps. I mean, there's a long layoff coming before the NBA finals start. So from our perspective, from a business perspective, we would certainly hope that if both of these series can at least go 5 games, that'd be good, just to keep the action going and not have a long layoff. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, game 3 back in Indiana, people were betting the Pacers taking the points. It ended up being not a great result for us because people did take the points there with the Pacers, which they were able to cover. And then the in-game on Boston, with Boston being down by such a big margin, people were taking the Celtics in-game and taking points. So we ended up getting beat on in game 3. But we'll see what happens tonight here in game 4 and see if Indiana has anything left and if they can kind of will themselves to get to a game 5 in Boston.
Hey, TG, last night, were you getting – I mean, there was a lot of Minnesota love. The line moved towards them. Mm-hmm. Was that happening there at the Borgata as well? And what would you have – what would you set the series price for Dallas playing Boston?
Well, there was certainly a lot of love for Minnesota. It was a good result for us there. And again, even in game, a lot of money came in on the Timberwolves live in play. So ended up being a very favorable result for the house in last night's game. And, you know, the thing if you look at a potential Boston-Dallas series, I think it comes down to who do you trust in the fourth quarter, Luka and Kyrie or Tatum and Brown? That's the question you need to ask yourself. The Boston team, all of the supporting cast around Tatum and Brown, they're going to be so important there. You know, White, Porzingis, Horford, everybody. They are a deeper team than Dallas. But I think if these games are close and you get into crunch time in the fourth quarter, I think the proven commodity there is Luka and Kyrie over what we have seen from Tatum and Brown throughout history in the playoffs. That's what I think really kind of makes that series an interesting one. Boston will certainly be favored. Don't get me wrong. They are the better team out of the two, but I don't think you can count Dallas out of in a series with Boston. I think they can potentially match out pretty well. Boston right now, -225 to win the NBA championship. Dallas is +185 currently. You know, if you like the Mavs chances in that, you know, again, I can't fault anybody for saying, hey, I'm going to take my chances with Dallas in that potential matchup.
And I mean, the Mavericks were a team that were doubted coming into this series. And what do? They prove you wrong and they go up 3-0. Another team that has been proving people wrong in the NHL is the New York Rangers. Betting market's been anti-Rangers since round one. I had a bunch of people coming on the show talking about how the Capitals were going to make that a really close series. They end up getting swept. Round two, they're dogs against the Canes. They go up 3-0, ultimately end up winning that series. Now, this series against Florida, same thing. They're a dog again. They win back-to-back overtime games, incredible fashion last night. They're up 2-1. Is the perception on the Rangers from the betting market starting to change? Do you expect that it will change now moving forward? What are your thoughts there?
Well, it's been much to my chagrin, Stormy, that the Rangers have been priced the way that they are, because here it's been nothing but Rangers support.
Wow.
Through all the series, including this one. And you know, again, it comes down to the New York market here that we draw from. I think now with the Knicks being eliminated, the New Yorkers who were backing both the Rangers and the Knicks now and kind of splitting their wallet, now they double down on the Rangers. And every single one of these games in the series against the Panthers, game one was all New York money up until close to when the puck dropped. And we took a big Panthers bet there that really helped balance things out. And you know, ended up with the Panthers winning. So that was one game where, you know, we probably didn't need the Panthers money. That would have been a decent result. But game two and three, we haven't seen any Panthers money. It's been all Rangers money. And obviously, as you said, the Rangers winning two, the last two in overtime, you know, and it's kind of Rangers fever. I mean, these fans pack the book for the games. It's extremely alive. I mean, the crowd is just very much alive in the book when the Rangers are playing right now. Every game, it is full here. So, you know, we from our liability standpoint, we certainly need the Panthers. The Rangers are the worst case scenario by far in the Cup. They're the only team that we really have any liability on, and it's a decent sized liability for the remaining four. But so from my perspective, I'd love to see the Panthers come back here and knock them out here. But certainly game to game, it's been almost all New York money for us.
TG, how about in the other game with the Stars and the Edmonton Oilers? I mean, you know, Dallas has become the capital of all winning teams, it seems like. And Ottinger for the Stars, I mean, his goal percentage, 92%. How much action are you getting on this game?
Yeah, it's been so game to game. The first two games, again, mostly it's been Dallas. We've needed Edmonton in both. And tonight, Edmonton is the $1.30 favorite at home. So it'll be interesting to see how this gets bet with Dallas now going on the road. Early money has been on Dallas, but not too much. So we'll see how it comes throughout the day. But this is a series here where, again, Oilers would probably be the better result for us in terms of the future book. But I think we'll be okay either way in terms of whoever comes out of the Western Conference heading into the Cup.
TG, appreciate your time as always, buddy. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Thank you.
And I clearly asked the wrong bookmaker about the Rangers, because I'm proud of New York fans, actually, though, Michael, for saying, I'm not buying into the President's Trophy curse. I believe in my team.
No question. I mean, and look, that garden's alive. I'm not a hockey aficionado as you are, but I would like to watch a game with the Rangers at the Garden. It just looks to me like a heck of a venue.
No, it's special. Coming up, we go into the negotiation room. Michael shares his perspective on the process behind getting some of these tough off-season contracts done. Plus, I want to know which deal from Michael's past was the biggest headache. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champion, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, V-S-I-N. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. The Celtics, 7.5-point favorites tonight against the Pacers in game four, total 222.5. And we'll talk about that series again a little bit later on in the show. But Michael, time to head into the negotiation room. As a former GM and executive, you've been part of many a contract negotiation, many agents and players trying to wheel and deal to get theirs, and you're on the team side trying to play cap gymnastics. This time of year in particular, like, where are GMs at in kind of maneuvering this time and all of the public perception of players not showing up at OTAs?
I don't think there's much of a panic. I mean, the way OTAs have been watered down, and, you know, it's not something that you're overly concerned about. What you really want is the younger players to get the rep and to teach the young players how to become professionals. I think that's ultimately what this is about, how to become a pro, how to get them in shape. Because all these guys, when they're coming in, Stormy, are not in shape. I mean, we see it. Worthy goes to Kansas City. Here's a guy who's a track guy who can fly, and he's not in shape. He pulls a – he's got a hamstring issue. So it's really about don't overreact, don't panic on this. I think the bigger issue is understanding where the market is and where the players want to go. And if you're a GM and a cap, you've got to have an understanding of what you need to get through the season financially – from the cap, how many practice squad, what you're going to do there, how much injured reserve money you have to leave over. And then you got to start looking into next year's cap and figure out where you're going to go and what you're going to need. And player development has to play a huge part into that, which you don't want to, you know. And this is why when we talked about the Jefferson, could they trade Jefferson? Yeah, because it plays into the cap management. It's just not, we have all this money, we're going to give it away. It's like people that think Jerry, when he said we're all in, is going to pay everybody. No, you can't pay everybody. It's called a cap. And you have to maneuver around, and you have to have player development in the areas where you don't have a cap, where you don't have a player that you know you're not going to be afford to sign, and you have to move on.
I know you and Femi yesterday.
Wow, Stormy, I just got just unbelievable news here on ESPN today, just now. Bill Walton died of cancer.
Mm. Dang.
Horrible.
Heartbreaking news. And you knew that he was dealing with a battle in his 70s. But, I mean, his personality is one that's 71. Radiated on TV for such a long time. He's a basketball Hall of Famer. Heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking, yeah. It's just sad. Our hearts and prayers go out to his family, his son Luke, who is a coach as well. You know, it's kind of startling when you see that. Just 71 years old, too young. Was very entertaining, was a great player. Unfortunately, the foot injuries during his career when he played at Portland, you know, and if you're a Deadhead, none of those Dead concerts are going to be the same without Bill around.
Yeah, I'm going to miss seeing him on TV in his tie-dye T-shirts and all of the fun and smile. I mean, he's brought me a ton of joy over the years, and so hate hearing that news. As you said, our thoughts certainly go out to his family, and hate that we had to hear something like that today. Michael, to continue, though, it's hard. It's like impossible to transition out of something like that. But to continue our conversation here in the NFL, I know you and Femi yesterday talked a lot about quarterbacks and the contracts trying to figure out there. Let's go to wide receivers today, because you mentioned Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb. We talked about Brandon Ayuk earlier in the program. Also, T. Higgins, Cortland Sutton, a number of players with ongoing contract negotiations in the wide receiver position. As far as it goes with these players right now, at what point do you think that you see extensions come down? Is it a domino effect where we need to get Justin Jefferson's deal done first to see where the market reacts from there? Like, what's your perception of this?
Well, Sutton doesn't even belong in this group. Like, he's just trying to let the tide ride him in, right? You know, like, you got to be a really good player to be in this group, and I would say the four above him. T. Higgins is unfortunate, because he's in a situation where it's economically friendly for them to sign him for 1 year, but he's going to get his paydays coming next offseason. We know that. So now we're down to these three contracts. And I think really what Lamb and Ayuk are doing are the same thing that Tua's doing and Trevor Lawrence are doing over at the quarterback. They're waiting for somebody to set the market so they can have a negotiation pool that brings them with them, right? They want to be able to say, okay, Tua got $55 million. I'm as good as Tua. I should get $56 million. Or, you know, Justin Jefferson just got $35 million a year. I may not be Justin Jefferson in terms of numbers, but I'm pretty close. Here you go. You got to give me 34 and a half, or you got to give me this, or give me this in guarantee. I think that's what the wait is. And so what you're trying to do is, and I think Tua waited because he wanted to see, you know, what the markets were going to do in terms of the other quarterbacks. And now he has that. And he can take a look and, you know, and just keep playing along. They all are working with each other. They say there's no collusion, but Jefferson, Ayuk, and all the agents that are involved in this deal, Lamb, they're all working together to kind of see what's going on. Now, they all want to beat one another. Don't get me wrong, because they're all going to use it in negotiations in terms of recruiting. But they all want to know what the deals are, and they don't believe one another, right? Even though one agent talks to another, they still are a little bit, well, I'm going to get 80 guaranteed. Well, wait till I see it. That's what he's telling us. I think there's a lot of that. There's a lot of gamesmanship going on right now.
Is there an offseason or a player or agent that comes to mind in your career that you just recall as being the biggest headache, so challenging to get? Like, we're just, come on, man, just figure it out. Let's get you on the field, be a part of the team. Is there anything that comes to mind?
Well, you know, when there was a lot of those, Stormy, because when we didn't have a rookie pool, the rookies, there was no salary structure with rookies. It was all what can you get? And so Richard Bennett, God rest his soul, he passed away. He was an agent for Eric Metcalf. He was, you know, he had a lot of Washington players in his past times. His father, Terry Metcalf, Eric's father, he represented him too. And it was very difficult to get a deal done because you couldn't get in any structured formation. And one of the things this collective bargaining agreement has done is taken away those rookie holdouts. We used to have them all the time, because they were not logical. We had Lawyer Tillman, who we drafted in the top of the second round, and we gave up a first-round pick to get him, and the agent wanted first-round money. And the kid held out, ruined his career, really. Ruined his career, whether he was going to have a good career or not, but he missed so much time in camp that's what they were doing. So now it's different. Now you're into, when I went to the Raiders, it became, you know, Al wanted a player signed, and the agent knew he was in Al's love affair. And so the agent was asking for a reasonable number, just knowing that Al was going to put pressure on you to give it to him. And that was uncomfortable. So there all the variables that come in. But now at least there is you're dealing with the same information. So your structure and your premise can be argued from that point. Your player did this. Here's what we've won. He's not better than that guy. We can disagree on who's better, but we're in the same camp. And the strength of your owner is really the strength of the negotiation. When Mike Brown says he's not going to redo T. Higgins' deal, that ain't getting redone. So that's over with. You can argue all you want. You can hold out. You can do everything you want to do. It ain't changing. Just ask Carson Palmer. Just ask Jesse Bates. But when you have an owner who's listening to the media who wants to make everybody happy, now all of a sudden the agents know that and they play that card. And that becomes a very effective negotiating tool, and it really creates a lot of problems. But we're so far better now than we were when I first started doing contracts back in the 80s, because we at least have an understanding of a structure that's a framework that you can work within.
I just keep thinking, though, that's got to be such a brutal position to be in as a general manager sometimes, when the ownership has so much pull into these things. And we talked a lot about it specifically with the David Tepper and the Carolina Panthers situation, right? Like, what he is good at and how he's made his money and made a name for himself hasn't been in football. But instead of letting the football people often do the jobs that they're put in these positions to do, they dip their toes into these things. Like, that give and take with ownership has to be so challenging, because ultimately they have the final say.
That's right. And I think ultimately you got to have the trust in people. But what happens is, and it's becoming more and more harder, is once you lose with Twitter and social media, all of a sudden the onslaught of pressure, and then the owner feels like he has to do something, and they're making so much money, all of them, players too, are making so much money that it's easy just to get rid of the coach. I mean, look, Bernie Bickerstaff Jr. takes the Cavaliers to the playoffs. I mean, he loses two of his best players, doesn't have them. He can't keep his job. Now, I don't know what were the other situations involved, and probably there was good reason for they needed a different voice. But, you know, it's easy for these owners to make changes because it really doesn't affect their pocketbook. When I started in 84, their coaches got a longer leash because the owners didn't want to pay off the contracts.
Well, Michael, hour one flew by. We got hour two on the horizon next on the Lombardi line. Yes, what's on Michael's mind? As well as we'll get back to the NBA conference finals talks. And speaking of NBA, as Michael referenced there a few minutes ago, rest in peace, basketball legend Bill Walton, who passed away at the age of 71 after a prolonged battle with cancer. We will be right back on the Lombardi line.